The Columbia River Basin watershed is one of the biggest in the United States, covering 260,000 square miles. And that includes creeks, streams, and rivers all across Idaho, as well as six other states, even parts of Canada. The basin, though, has struggled with issues like water quality and toxic pollution, as well as fish conservation. Now, there are many who want to help clean up and preserve the river basin, but that can be tricky because there's no one overreaching entity. There's not one overreaching entity, rather, in charge of this sprawling watershed. This water system, like many in the United States, is governed by a complex web of local and state and federal authorities. The 32nd Annual Conference of the Society of Environmental Journalists is taking place in Boise this week, and it will look at who governs watersheds as well as new ways to collaborate among concerned parties to help river basins like the Columbia River. Mary Lou Socha is the former Columbia River Restoration Program Manager in Region 10 of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and she'll be part of a panel on Wednesday. It's titled Watersheds, Governance, and Power Structures, and she is joining us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Mary Lou, can we just start by you explaining quickly what the Columbia River Restoration Program is and how long has it been around?
So in approximately 2003, 2004, EPA became really concerned, the concern came from tribal people in the Columbia Basin about toxics in fish. And there had been some studies, contaminant studies and also consumption studies. And we saw that there was a lot of these salmon restoration and recovery efforts that were happening at the watershed level. And we said, why can't we do something at the watershed level that would address toxics and get local people involved in toxics reduction and get ownership at the watershed level? And as you said, the Columbia Basin is a very complicated and big watershed, but we said, let's do it. And we started convening meetings around the basin, inviting lots of folks and bringing people together and talking about how we could work to reduce toxics. We talked to industries. We would try and look at where folks were doing really good things. We talked to farmers who are doing great work. And we, as a result of this work that happened over a period of many years, in 2016, the Clean Water Act was amended to create the Columbia River Basin Restoration Program. And that program built on the collaboration that we had created and also the non-regulatory approach by directing EPA to lead a working group and also directing EPA to lead a grant program that would fund toxics reduction efforts around the basin. So funding, we started getting our first funding in about 2019, and we started funding grants. Our first grants were issued in 2020. And then something very exciting happened in 2021 as a part of the bipartisan infrastructure law. We were awarded $79 million, and that will be in funds all throughout the basin to fund toxics reduction and water quality improvement efforts. Mm. So that's the foundation and history of this work.
So I mentioned in the introduction to you that the Columbia River Basin, it covers two countries, seven states, but also 16 total reservations. So how in the world do you get started trying to clean up and protect the watershed with so many competing interests involved?
So maybe, you know, we didn't look at the entities that we were working with as competing because many of the tribes, you know, they live in their communities, they're part of the communities. And we specifically engage with the tribal governments. We outreach to them very specific and we work really closely with them. And we would have meetings around the basin and we would try and invite, you know, we would invite people to come. And I remember a couple meetings where people said to me, I've never even met anybody from EPA before. And that was pretty exciting. And so we just brought lots of people together. We would have the meetings, have people in the watershed talk about what they were doing. And we basically just gave ownership of this collaboration to all, you know, to the people of the watershed. So that's our governance structure. Instead of having the federal government or state government be in charge, we said, what, you know, we reached out to people, what do you want to do? What's important? How do we move forward? And then we built a program based on that.
So what about competing uses of the watershed? I mean, how do you integrate then the needs of things like fishing and farming, but also hydropower? And then there's forests, there's recreations, there's other things. So I'm just curious as to, once again, how do you manage that aspect of it?
So this is a non-regulatory program, and we were not going to say you can't do this or you can't do that or you can't do this. Instead, we were going to say, all right, what's happening in forestry that's really working? What are some successes in forestry? What farmers are doing really great work? How can we work with the Corps of Engineers in the work that, you know, in their management of the hydro system in a really positive way? So we tried to say, what are the positive things that are out there? What are the things that are successes? And then how do we replicate those successes and build on those successes?
Let me reintroduce you for people that may just be joining us. We're talking with Mary Lou Socia. She is the former Columbia River Restoration Program Manager. Now, she'll be a part of a panel in Boise this week speaking about how large watersheds like the Columbia River Basin are governed. So, Mary Lou, how is the health of the Columbia River right now?
So, the Columbia has some serious issues. I mean, one of the issues, you know, that the Columbia River Basin Restoration Program is, you know, is focused on is toxics. And as I said earlier, that relates a lot to tribal fish consumers and other high fish consumers. But we have actually seen we've seen reductions, we've seen successes. There was a project in the Yakima River in Washington where DDT was reduced so significantly that a fish advisory that was expected to be lifted in about 25 years was lifted in 5 years. So we have toxics wow. problems, but we know we can address those. The other issue that's really important in the Columbia that relates to climate change in the dams is water temperature. And temperature is also a really big issue in the Columbia as well.
Mm-hmm. So when you say toxins, what kind of toxins are leaking into the river and where do they come from?
So toxics are very complicated. So we obviously have legacy pollutants like DDT that is, you know, that are based upon historic use. We have legacy mm-hmm. pollutants like PCBs, you know, that was a flame retardant, and those are also based on historic uses. We have pesticides. We have some current use pesticides that are of concern. And then we have some emerging contaminants that we're looking at like PFAS. And folks might hear that's in the news a lot. And so there's concern about PFAS. There's also mercury. There's flame retardants like polybromated diphenyl ethers. There's a long list of different toxins, but I think you can kind of cut them into legacy pollutants, current uh-huh. use pollutants, and then emerging contaminants that we don't really understand, but we're starting to get a better understanding. And some of the research or some of the monitoring of the Columbia River Basin Restoration Program is looking into some of those emerging contaminants.
So then how do you tackle a pollution issue when, once again, it's hard to figure out who's in charge when you have so many competing governing bodies?
So our collaboration is the four key states, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Montana are part of our collaboration. We have federal governments that we work with, and we have local communities that we work with. We have nonprofits, we have the tribal governments, and our collaboration is really built. There's lots of really smart people. So if we have monitoring data and we understand where a pollutant is a problem, if we understand where the pollutant might be coming from, then smart people come together and figure out what can we do to deal with this pollutant. I mean, for example, there are a lot of things that are going through the wastewater system that municipal wastewater discharges don't have the responsibility to remove. So we funded a grant with clean water dischargers, like municipal dischargers in Oregon, to look at the PFAS issue. and look at some source identification of where PFAS is coming from. And that will help us as we move forward to figure out, how do we manage this contaminant? How do we control this contaminant? How do we take actions that are going to reduce this contaminant coming into the Columbia River Basin? And this, and you know, it applies the same thing with agricultural things. How do we understand what some of the contaminants are out there? There is a one of my favorite work efforts in the Columbia are the pesticide stewardship partnerships, where entities work in partnership with farmers. They do some monitoring first, they identify what the pollutant is, and then they work with the farmers to implement best practices to reduce the use of that pesticide. And actually, farmers like it, because if they can use less pesticide, they're saving money. So it's a matter of like identifying what the problem is and then working with really smart people to identify what are the various solutions that are going to work in a very diverse basin. So it's going to be different in Montana and different in Idaho and different in Washington, but bringing the people together to figure out how we solve these problems.
Mm-hmm. So with that and bringing these groups together to solve these problems, what about the tribes? Are they going to be able to have a bigger say in this process? I mean, they are an underrepresented group when it comes to all of this.
So, as I mentioned earlier, the foundation of our work was toxics in fish and tribal fish exposure from fish consumption studies that we knew about. You know, and I worked actually on one in Idaho for many years, fish consumption studies that we knew about that identified that tribal people were eating way more than the regular, you know, average fish consumer. So tribes are really, really important in our work. And when we launched this $79 million, our first grant allocation went to tribal governments. And we are, EPA will be awarding some up to $2 million a grant to tribal governments to work to reduce toxics. So, and tribes have a really important say. We've put tribal governments and tribal people front and center in our collaboration.
So how successful has it been bringing all of these groups together to collaborate to, you know, try to clean up the Columbia River Basin?
Well, one of the things I would always tell people is we'd have a meeting. When we would have meetings, we would never have enough chairs in the room. All these people would show up. And I think that it is successful. I think people want to be engaged in their community and they want to be engaged in helping to make decisions. And they, the farmers, like I said, the farmers coming up to me saying, you're the first person I met from EPA. The farmers want to like work with us and talk to us. And, you know, they want to do it in a non-regulatory approach. And that is, I think, what was the, has been the key to our work. And it is, I think it's, extraordinary. We've been extraordinarily successful, and I'm just very excited about the future and what's going to happen with all the influx of funding from the bipartisan infrastructure law.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about this. I know it's a really complex issue, so thank you for taking time to explain it to us a little bit better.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about a very exciting work effort happening in the Columbia River Basin.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time. We've been talking with Mary Lou Socia. She's the former Columbia River Restoration Program Manager in Region 10 of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. She's going to be part of a panel Wednesday titled Watersheds, Governance, and Power Structures at the Society for Environmental Journalists Conference in Boise. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I've never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast in its latest series, Taking Cover.